Vanetta Dumas Jennings is a 30-year industry veteran, image specialist, salon owner, author, educator, a member of the DC Board of Barbering and Cosmetology, and a community advocate. Today, we're going to hear her story, how she got to where she is, and what that path was like along the way. Welcome back to the Hairdresser Strong Show. I am your host, Robert Hughes, and today I'm with Vanetta Dumas Jennings. How are you doing today, Vanetta?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on the show. So we have run into each other a few times. You came to our beauty business brunch, and I ran into you at the Serious Business in New Orleans. And I'm so happy that I feel like we've been communicating, and I'm happy we finally got this together and we were able to get together for this. So thank you so much. And anybody who isn't familiar with Vanetta, she is, like I said in the opening, there's like so many things that she does. So Vanetta, why don't we start off by hearing your story and tell us where does the story begin?
I'm really delighted to be here. So thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm humbled. And yes, I am an avid learner and have been in the industry for probably 30 years, but I could say my entire life, simply because it's something that I knew at a very young age that I wanted to do. And I think if anybody can relate, they always kind of fix in on someone in particular. And back when I was coming up, it was Lady Sings the Blues and Mahogany with Diana Ross starring on both of those. And that was definitely an introduction to beauty for me. As a small child, cosmetology at some point was an option in high school. And I decided then that in high school, I wanted to be a hairstylist. And in that process, I was counseled to do clerk stenography, which was kind of depressing for me. I didn't necessarily fit into that mold simply because I knew I wanted to be a hairstylist. And simply then, that's where I spent a lot of my time in high school. And most people thought that's what I did. And the reason I share this after 30 years to go that far back, I think it's a very familiar story where sometimes this industry is not taken seriously. And even though it's a billion-dollar industry, we're not taken seriously. And if you think about it, even on Congress, we're fighting in so many different ways for wage representation for business owners to just be recognized in a solid way as it pertains to our taxes. So that's how serious it is. And that's how important it is to share that even when people don't take us seriously, we have to make a decision. If it's what we want to do, we can survive. And I'm sure we can think about many people that have done just that. And I would say Horst Reckenbacher, who was the founder of Aveda. And I can go as far back as Madam C.J. Walker, who was the first female millionaire. And if you think about an industry that doesn't exist, but yet we're making millions and billions of dollars in that industry, you have to ask yourself if it's something that you're really good at and it's something you want to do, you just got to pursue it. And that's exactly what I did. And when I had the opportunity to speak back with that counselor and let her know when she told me I would never make any money, that I actually was making money and I was making really good money and so forth and so on. I've been doing this for 30 years.
That's amazing. Awesome. Well, I'm glad you brought that stuff up. In our pre-conversation, you mentioned that some families and other people do not really understand the path of the business, and there could be a lot of pressure, and then you're getting it from a school counselor as well. I think that is really making it tough for a lot of people.
Yes, it's a very discouraging experience. You have to be self-willed in going through these challenges, but it's even more discouraging when you have family members that are not supportive in this profession. And I've, as a business owner, I have experienced countless of staff that quit simply because their family wasn't supportive, whether they were not supportive because they had children and they didn't want to make the sacrifices that needed to be made so they can build themselves, or they wasn't supportive because they were a strong advocate that they should go to college. There's a variety of reasons why families are not supportive. And I won't get into that because it's a very sensitive matter. But what I will take from that is to share that if it's something you believe in and it's something that you find that drives you and what's going to get you out of bed in the morning, I would say as a testimony that that's what you do and that's what you pursue and you take the steps necessary to accomplish those things. I did go to college. I went to college because I knew that the hair industry was a long game for me. And I knew that for me, it wasn't a sprint. It was something that I was going to be doing for a long time. And I needed to have the knowledge necessary and the skills necessary for me to feel as if I can take myself to where I needed to take myself beyond the chair. So yes, I did go to college for business management and marketing and communications. Long, long, long time ago.
Was that before or after hair cosmetology school?
I went to hair school first. Okay. So I was a non-traditional college student, and most of the people in college didn't believe I was a hairstylist because, of course, they thought that I was just a student like them. But I went to hair school first, and I found great joy in the business. I've been doing hair in Cincinnati for 12 years, and I believe in D.C. for 18 years.
Okay.
And there was a time I thought I would leave the industry. And I remember when I was young in my career building my business. And it brings me to where I am now as a salon owner. I find that it's a challenge for the reasons that I spoke of and other reasons that we have not yet touched on, that not making money is the biggest hurdle that most people have to face. And when trying to go over that hurdle, they don't have the tools necessary. And I think the biggest tools is the foundation. People tend to forget that the foundation is what's going to keep you and what's going to continue to create the pathway for success. So I wrote a book and I've done countless of workshops in the Washington, D.C. area, The Making of a Six-Figure Stylist. And basically, it just goes through the format of what it takes. It's not so much about the money, because the money will come. There was a movie once, they said, if you build it, they will come. So it's never about the money. It's about what it takes to be successful. And for me, I remember being in the salon working as an apprentice. And I think if you're working as an apprentice, you're going to be successful. Instead of going to school right to a chair, going to school right to a booth, or going to a salon suite, it's going to be an apprentice. When you're an apprentice, you're learning the foundation, not the foundation that you learn in school, because obviously we all learn to shampoo, we all learn to, you know, do the fundamentals, but you're able to hone into those skills on a different level. And being the apprentice also sets the stage for the professionalism and the foundation with dealing with the public day in and day out. And that's super important. And I like to accredit the fact that having a salon, being a salon apprentice was the best thing that I could have done. And it set the strong foundation. I worked under a lady that was the who's who in the city at the time. She did everyone's hair that was anyone's hair, and everyone in between. And that was so crucial to see, because that's when I was able to identify what type of hair I wanted to do, what type of people I wanted to work with, what type of interactions I wanted to have, what type of interactions was important, When you run across people that were difficult to manage and deal with, and it was where you can make mistakes. I made so many mistakes during that time, and I had the backing of a person that was seasoned to be able to coach me through. And I think that's part of the challenge, that when you go from the school to a salon suite, that you miss the mistakes that can be made, and you wonder why you're not able to build that clientele base, simply because you can't color platinum hair, or maybe you can't color burgundy hair, whatever it takes to take someone from black to platinum. And you have to be able to tell them it can't happen in a day. But if you not had that backing, you may believe that Kim Kardashian got her hair colored platinum the first time. So being able to have that strong foundation is important for so many different reasons, beyond just professionalism, skill set, customer service, but also those times where you have to sit still. What do you do in those times of sitting still? You got to constantly be making money. And what I did, and I like to take pride in this, and I think it's very important to share because I'm really proud of it. But I've never worked in a salon and I spent time in a break room. There was never a moment that the break room was a place for me, aside from having lunch. And the reason that I take pride in that is because you can't make money in the break room. And I was always the top earner at any salon. I haven't worked in many salons, but the salons I've worked in were always the best in the city. And it was important for me to be the top earner in those locations. Not because earning money was important, aside from being able to provide for your family, is I'm just competitive. So that also, being in a salon environment, bring that competitive nature by being able to work with other people that was just like me. But not going back to not spending time in the break room, because, you know, building a business is slow for some and it can be fast for others. It, you know, we're in a new time than we were ever in when I was coming up. So maybe that Insta-famous stuff is real. But when I'm coming up, building yourself is slow. And being in the break room, you hear this chatter. And the chatter is not necessarily positive. It's, why I don't have clients? It's, look at so-and-so, or whatever's going on back there. I can't really speak to what really goes on back there because I never spent time back there. But I do know the energy in the break room is a negative energy, and it goes to the salon floor when you're not in a good space. So what I did to avoid the break room pitfalls is many things. I would grab a mannequin to perfect the skills that I found myself weak in. I've always known what skills I need that needed work for me. And I knew what it was I wanted to do. So I did a little bit of everything, and that's how I found out what it was I wanted to do. And I'm more of a generalist, but my specialty is healthy hair, hair cutting, and hair color. But as a generalist, it's nothing that when you walk in the salon, and that's the other thing I was proud of, because I worked in a full service salon. And when they needed someone in any area, I was always available and could fill in. And that was because I was good at everything. And the reason I was good at everything is because I spent time learning everything. And the reason I spent time learning everything, because I needed to make money. And until I built a name for myself, and until I built a reputation, and until that niche was filled, I did whatever it took to make money. And once I figured out what it was my niche was, then, and as I built that reputation and built that clientele, I was able to expand in ways that I no longer had to do those interim things, like nails, as an example, in the salon, or anything in the salon that I didn't want to do.
Hold on. So you were doing more than just hair?
Oh, yeah. In the beginning.
So like nails, waxing, stuff like that?
Everything.
What? Because
as a cosmetologist, we can't.
That's amazing. I'm like, yeah, I had to do everything too, but then I did, but only hair, everything. You know, 'cause nowadays it's like I want to only do short haircuts, or I
Oh
only
God.
want to do like balayage, or I
Oh
want to
God.
only want to do extensions. And I think that that's interesting. But I also like agree with you. I think like in the beginning when you're hungry and you want to make some money, maybe you got the license, you've been trained to do these things. You can continue to practice and get your money. And so anyway, sorry. That's I just needed to make sure that I heard you
Yeah,
right
I
on that
filled the
one.
gap where the need was. And that was because I worked in a 8,000 square foot salon. Each department was segmented, and I flowed in and out of each department as the need was, just because if my book was empty and someone called off of work, I would be the first to raise my hand. I'll do it. And the reason I was able to do it because I never spent time in the break room. I was practicing something and I was
Nice.
perfecting that. And then
So,
because I was early on, you have to think about it when you're early in your career, and you have to think about it. This was like what, the 90s, the early 90s. We were not necessarily strong with departmentalizing our skills. I did makeup. I took advanced classes. Everything that came across my path, I did it because I didn't know who I was as a hairstylist yet. So I needed to identify what it was I wanted to do. And the only way to do it was to do it, perfect it, and see if I liked it. I did
totally.
men's hair cutting, I did makeup, I did hair.
So
All
did
parts of
so
it.
when you so you build your book, and then you eventually what were you in when you were in Cincinnati? How what was your career? Like, you were working behind the chair, and did you get into all this other stuff, the salon owner, the author, educator, community advocate? Did that come once you got to DC, or did you do any of that in Cincinnati?
So in Cincinnati, that was the very foundation of my career. So the basis of what I did ooh, so much. I can't even go back that far, honestly. But I'll say this: I started as an apprentice. So I've worked in a salon. I did commission. I did booth rent, and then I did commission. So most of what I did. I did glamour shots. That's where I was able to practice my skills and build my speed and makeup. I did a thing like hair cuttery. I was thinking it was Fantastic Sam's back then, and I wanted to build my speed in men's cutting. Everything I did had a purpose. I didn't work at glamour shots or Fantastic Sam's because I knew I wanted to cut men's hair, or I knew I wanted to just do makeup. I did it because I wanted to perfect it, and that's where you were going to get the clientele to fast pace that track. All while working in another salon.
Interesting. How long would you work at one of those places? Like a year, 2 years?
It was about a year.
About a year?
I did that for a year for each one of those.
Oh,
And
interesting.
what I did was build my speed, my opportunity to work with all hair types, and it just helped to sharpen my skills while I was building my main clientele. Because when you build up, you got to face it in the beginning, when you're building a clientele, you have so many white space and gaps in your day. So I filled my white space and gaps with having other opportunities to perfect my skill while making an income.
Oh, that's so smart. So you're grinding out, like working and building your skills, and then you move to DC, and tell us about that and building in a new place and leading to salon ownership.
So at the place, I would re be remiss to mention this before I get into the segue of coming to DC. At the place when I was in Cincinnati, I was pretty much at the top of my career. So I felt I was doing hair and makeup on TV on Fox every Monday. So I had that representation. I had a very high-end clientele doing the best work that I found myself to be doing, which is haircutting and hair color. So I no longer was filling my gaps with doing everything. I was at that place where my book was like what I wanted it to look like. And I made the decision that I outgrew Cincinnati. And I was doing some community advocate, but it was at the very beginning of that. I moved to DC. I remember going to the nail department and somebody said, you should move to DC. You should move to New York. And that very night, I got online and I put in my resume and I got a call the very next day from Aveda. And in Cincinnati, I had been trying to work for Aveda for years with no phone call. So to get a phone call from Washington, D.C., it was like, wow. So I had to create a video and send it in, and I got selected to come in. So when I came to D.C., Aveda had reached their capacity for hiring, and they told me to keep checking back because the budget had ran out. And so that's what I did. And Aveda hired me, which was an amazing opportunity for me to hone on my skills in education. I was already teaching, but this was another level. And
Aveda, the institute or the art salon? Okay, institute.
Aveda right. Institute. So they sent me to Minneapolis. I learned everything I needed to learn. I became the best hair cutter that met their satisfaction and their goals. And Aveda has a high standard. So I felt very good and very accomplished. And from there, I've always wanted to do makeovers. So doing makeovers I felt like the epitome of beauty. It's just making people look good and feel good. And I thought that I would be on Sally Jesse Raphael, and I'm dating myself, to do makeovers, or Oprah Winfrey Show to do makeovers. That became a dream of mine. And so I decided that I wanted to do makeup, hair, and fashion. And that's when the book came around. I became somebody headhunted me for whatever reason. I guess I was out there because I was networking when I moved to the city. I came to a city and didn't know a living, breathing soul when I moved.
Were you working in a salon or anything?
I was not.
So you're teaching? Okay, cool.
No, I was just teaching cosmetology. And okay. But yet, when I would go out in the city for happy hour, because, you know, D.C. is a big happy hour city. This is back when Sex and the City came around. There was these happy hours. And when people would ask me what I did, I told them I did makeovers. And I would give them a card to offer them makeovers. And so eventually I was headhunted. And so that's how I came about to be a co-author of Executive Etiquette Power. And I wrote a segment on image. I wrote a segment on image and it was 10 pages long. And then that's when I start doing promotional speaks, where I was able to go on stage and talk to maybe, you know, anywhere from 100 to 300 people or more, and talk about image and makeovers and self-esteem. And then I did some things with BET. I did some things with Jack and Jill. I did some things with DC, where I had a little sub grant to go into the summer programs to do different talks. And so I came up with different, what do you call those, PowerPoint presentations to just teach. And so in that time, so I guess when I was doing all the talks, the energy was super high, but I wasn't making any money. So I'm like, here I am being highly sought after to speak at these events. I wasn't being paid. And only thing was paying me was when I was working for DC government, and I would get a little subcontract. I don't mean little. That's one of the words I use, little. But I was getting a subcontract, and that was the only thing that was paying me. And I was looking at myself and I'm like, yeah, this ain't enough. So I got this bright idea that you need to go into the salon. I said, the only way people are going to get to know you is if you go into the salon. And I went into the salon, and I'll never forget going into the salon. They told me they were not going to hire me. It was on the U Street corridor. And they said, we don't have, because I didn't have clientele. Like, I went everywhere. I interviewed with everybody. Nobody would hire me. I'm like, this is harder than it looks. And at this point, I'm not working with the VEDA anymore because I realized teaching was not something that I wanted to do anymore. And it wasn't the educating part of the teaching that I had challenge with. It was the classroom management. That wasn't my mode to manage adults about their career, being on time or being in dress code or taking the ticket. Yes, you got to do this haircut. You know, yes, you got to do this hair color. Or it was just the classroom management part of teaching was not where I excelled. So going into the salon and going to the image coach, that gives you a little backstory of why I shifted to image consulting, because I decided when I left Aveda, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place, but I decided when I left Aveda in 06 that I would never work for anybody ever again. I made that decision. But it didn't go that well because, as I say, I was doing the image consulting. I was doing the book tours. I was doing all the things. It just wasn't paying. So I said, I'll go into the salon. I'll maximize the opportunity to meet new people. And when I did that, I'll never forget it. And this is a funny story. You'll appreciate it. It'll go back to what we talked about in the pre-talk about when things didn't go right. I worked at Georgetown Aveda. They hired me. Now, I've always worked in a salon where I did African-American hair and outside of when I worked at some of the other places. And so color wasn't my strong point at this point with any hair type other than African-American. So working in Georgetown, I had to do all hair types, which I was comfortable with. I taught it. It was great. So, but I never experienced foils exploding. So I had this lady, and this was back when Obama was running for president, and she was covering Obama, working for MSNBC, and she had this contract. She had this contract, and in her contract, it said, you can't change your hair. Well, unfortunately, I did her she had this real big head, I would say armpit length, curly, wavy hair, gorgeous hair, heavily highlighted. This is before we were doing bylaws. This is back in 06, right? And this is when we were doing foils at the root, not even doing a shadow root or any of that. So you have to do them foils at the root. And so I did those foils and they were processing and I did them foils pretty. All the casings were perfect, gorgeous foils. Her hair expanded because it was thick and it bled all over that good other previously colored hair.
Oh no.
They fired me.
Oh no.
She complained. And I'm like, I've been fired before. It's not the end of the world. I'm resilient. And so I was tired of paying them parking tickets anyway. In Georgetown.
Yeah, Georgetown is like that.
Yeah, so I was tired of paying them parking tickets anyway. So, and I was being hazed there. I was being hazed. Because, you know, anytime you bring a new client, a new stylist in, this is something good to talk about. Anytime you bring a new stylist in a salon that don't have clients amongst people that do have clients, but yet they still have opportunity to get more, no one's happy about that. They're not happy that you're splitting that new client with somebody new and my books are not filled. So I was already being hazed and treated badly. So I'm sure that magnified them hiring me. So that energy wasn't good, but it was no bad blood, but yet it was the best thing they could have did. So I went to the new salon. They would not hire me. So I wrote them a letter. I'm like, please hire me. I don't remember what the letter said, but they eventually hired me. And one of the things they said, well, we don't have clients. And they were a much smaller salon. Only thing they did was hair. So it was a little different for me as well, because I'm used to working in spas where you get a facial massage and all the other services that's available. Excuse me. So I just said, hire me. Don't worry about the clients. Now, mind you, I still don't know anybody in the city. Because being in Aveda, I wasn't necessarily meeting people behind the chair because I'm instructing. And even though I worked in the clinic, my goal was not to meet people to build my book. My goal was to teach the students how to perform these services. And it's a different clientele base altogether there anyway. So I'm a retract. When I was teaching, something said, go into the salon and start building your clientele. Because the itch was coming back. It was coming back that I needed to have my hands in that hair. So I didn't do it. So here I am back here telling them, just hire me. Don't worry about the clients. And I remember my first check being $800. And I looked at that check and I went into the office and I said, something's wrong here. Because, you know, I did the pay period in the hole and I counted my money and I'm figuring I should get, you know, all the things. And I just wasn't prepared for an $800 check. And I hadn't made 800 and I can't tell you how long. And here I am 30 something or however old I was. And I'm like, I think by this time, this was 09. And I'm like, yeah, this is not going to work. It's not adding up. So they gave me, I think the whole pay period and a half check. I don't remember how much it was, but I just remember that first check being $800. And I told them, this is the last time I make $800 because this is not going to pay for nothing. And that's when I would say, that was January. I would say April. And this is no story. I still have people that's alive and breathing that can vouch for me. I was fully booked.
Oh, wow.
Not only was I fully booked, this is more truth. It was a couple people in the salon that was not, they became booked. They hired two more people and they became booked. And all these people are still doing hair today. I was so busy that I filled everyone that came after me book.
Nice.
Because they got my overflow.
Nice.
And this is the truth. The funny thing about it is I started by doing free hair. And when you're hungry, you'll do anything. And anything that you feel that could generate an income. And for me, it was free hair because I don't believe in giving discounts. I just was taught never to give a discount. If you're going to give a discount, call it a gift. So I did free hair. And this was back before algorithms was important to Facebook. And so I was able to go on Facebook and I was new to Facebook because back then we were on another social outlet.
MySpace.
We were on MySpace and we were not thinking about building a clientele on MySpace. We were just on MySpace creating backdrops and having fun. So I did the free hair. So I went on Facebook. I didn't have any friends on Facebook. Still didn't know many people in DC, not enough to tell someone to come get their hair done because everybody that I didn't know were the people I partied with and socialized with. And not, well, I'll say one of them used my image consulting services when I were doing full-time image consulting. And one of them came to be a customer. And out of all of the people I knew, even to this day, only one of the people that I partied with came and got their hair done back when I moved to the city. And at this point, I had been here from 05 to 09. So that's 4 years of the people I knew, they was not coming. And it's fine. And that, they always say, you know, sometimes the people that you're closest to are not the ones that's going to support you. It's the strangers. So when I did the free hair, I went on Facebook and I said, recommend me a person that's deserving of a free hairdo. And this goes back to my Cincinnati days when I used to do makeovers on Fox. And we would pick a theme. It would be teachers, service workers, waitresses, and we would just give them whatever the theme was of those, we'll give them a makeover. And I used to do two people on the segment. And so that's where I got the idea from. And so I said, give me some people that are deserving makeovers. I don't remember who they were in terms of the topic of what I said. And then I let the people vote. I said, make sure all your friends become my friends so they can vote for you. And then I did the makeovers. And nice. That's how I became fully booked by April. And the salon owners, they were amazed. They couldn't believe it. I'm still friends with them to this day. And that's when I decided to go out on my own. And I gave them a month's notice. I didn't leave them high and dry. There was a little contention amongst us, but the contention was more so I was highly driven. And I was making so much money. And I was so busy. I just needed more assistance. And they were not willing to give me the assistance. Everybody was upset with me. They were like, you're working the people too bad, too hard. And I was dumb. I was just hungry because I knew I'm a commission employee. And I knew I needed to make six figures to be able to take care of my lifestyle. So I know I needed to make that much more so I can still take home six figures. And they said I was driving the kids crazy, and I was, and I didn't know any better. Everybody didn't have that same work ethic. I was a workhorse. I was taking clients every 30 minutes. And honestly, that was terrible. It was mean. It was hard. I mean, that work, being that after COVID, I had to do that work. That work is hard work. And to make people shampoo every 30 minutes, blow dry, you know, that's hard.
Well, what's the alternative? To do less clients?
Yes, that's the alternative. Or have more assistants.
It all sounds to me like it's going to impact the bottom line. Less no. clients, more overhead, more so expenses.
The owner made a decision that I was going to take less clients. I was a little upset behind that. So I started taking clients every 45 minutes. It did not affect the bottom line because when you're taking less clients, you're working a little bit more. It was like an assembly line. And you're able to spend a little bit more time with the guests, which they like and they appreciate. So it didn't change my bottom line by working less. Hmm. It just made the energy in the salon better.
Okay.
Because happy staff. I think one of the challenges that I faced was a few people hair came out because maybe the shampoo assistants weren't doing a great job shampooing out the chemicals. So there was some adverse effects to that.
Gotcha.
Doing more people doesn't equate making more money because I do a lot less people now.
Uh-huh.
And I make more than what I was making then. And I was making really good money.
So I have worked with a number of people and I still work with some people who work more hours than me and take more clients. And some of those people only make 20% more than me. And for me, it's worth the 20% reduction in my income to have more time. Like I only work 4 days in the behind the chair. They work five. I don't take as many clients per day, but I charge
more premium.
But like not really. It's just more that I charge for everything. Like I charge for every treatment, every conditioning treatment, every scalp treatment, every gloss, and they don't. Although there is one person who takes way more customers than me, and he makes like almost twice as much money as I do. So I do think that there's probably, I hear what you're saying. I've seen people that make like, you know, like 100, say behind the chair, their revenue, let's say after somewhere around 60%, maybe 54, 56, 57% is like 130, 140,000 versus someone being like, 250,000, like after commission and stuff. And but then I've also seen the majority of it is like 140 versus say 110,000. And it's like that difference isn't worth killing yourself for the extra work. And yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was working, I had no quality of life. no quality of life when I was working that hard. That's not one of the things in my career that I take pride in, but I do take pride in the fact that I was able to do it. And I was doing it not knowing how I was doing it. I was just working really hard to build a reputation in a place that no one knew me. And that was where my biggest focus was. The revenue was just a part of being able to survive. You know, you need a certain amount to survive. And then the other part was just the competitiveness that I have. You know, I love what I do and I'm really good at it. And I'm an entirely different person than I was back then.
I was just going to ask you, how did that turn into salon ownership?
As I was sharing, they were not ready to give me more assistance. I was working so hard. I couldn't continue to work that hard at the capacity I was working and having just disgruntled assistants because they were working so hard. But as a young stylist, and I say young stylist because for me, I was starting over. Opportunity came up. That's what happened. I didn't decide to open a salon. The salon ownership was always just a dream. So an opportunity came up for me to move, and I was able to renovate an entire space and open it cash, no loan, in a nice. Quick turnaround, like maybe 1 or 2 months.
What? A quick
turnaround. And well, the reason I was able to do it because I was saving, right? And so
you had no life to spend your money.
Yeah, I was saving, and so when the opportunity came, the money was there.
Nice.
And I was just able to renovate the space. I give God the credit because God is the head of my life. So I count it all joy. That even in that situation, I didn't tell you this, but I fasted for 40 days because I told you I started in January. I fasted for 40 days for a new life. And that's kind of the result, the residual, I believe, of that. But opening a salon, I was so busy and had the clientele. I hired one of my former students, helped shape her. And she eventually stayed with me for several years. My staff stayed with me all in all about 9 years prior to COVID. But opening a salon was the hardest by far. And not speaking on COVID, COVID was the second by far hardest thing that I've ever had to deal with in my entire career. Salon ownership is the toughest.
So I want to just jump in right there because I feel like this story has been so awesome, and I don't want to rush the rest of it because I feel like your story of salon ownership, what your struggles were, how you overcame them, leading you into more community advocacy and being on the board for the DC Board of Barbering and Cosmetology. I'm thinking taking time to do a part 2 to your story.
I'm fine with whatever.